This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Song of Solomon. Now, here's Pastor Sandy as he teaches through the book of Song of Solomon, chapters 1 through 4.
Now, here's an appropriate spiritual application. Psalm 2, verse 12 says this, "Kiss the Son." Did you know that we kiss Jesus? Not literally, not going to creep you out or anything. We kiss Jesus, not literally, but relationally. When we express our desire to follow Him, our longing to know Him, our intention to walk with Him, this is a kiss in a spiritual sense. A spiritual kiss is a prayer or a song or a praise or a thank you. And in turn, Jesus kisses us when we sense His warmth and His approval. He kisses us when His Spirit reveals His presence or His power or His plan to our hearts. And as with any kiss, this kind of exchange, it excites and it sparks and it ignites a flame. Truly, the kisses of Jesus also are better than wine. Well, the Shulamite continues in verse 3. "Because of the fragrance of your good ointments, your name is ointment poured forth. Therefore, the virgins love you. Draw me away." Now recall, the queen, she's in some new surroundings here. During her country courtship, it was just her and her shepherd, just the two of them, Shlomo and Shula. The days were free. The hours were private. The duties were light. But now she's in Jerusalem, and she is the wife of the king. Now she has servants and responsibilities, and Solomon is about his daily duties. He's busy attending to affairs of state. Often he's late returning home to the palace. Life has changed for her. She's not used to sharing her husband. And worse, she has become painfully aware that in the palace there are other women who long for her husband. Oh, she sees the looks. They'd love to be with the king. Suddenly, she realizes that she has competition, and she wishes the king would just take her away. "Take me back to the country," she says. In the next line, the daughters of Jerusalem, the palace maidens, they express their desire for Solomon. They say, "We will run after you." The Shulamite counters by reminding them all that the king has chosen her. She says, "No, the king has brought me into his chambers." That doesn't quench, though, the longing of these maidens. They say of Solomon, "We will be glad and rejoice in you. We will remember your love more than wine." The Shulamite can't argue. She understands what they see in him. She responds, "Rightly do they love you." All this competition, all this vying for Solomon's affections, it starts to breed in the Shulamite some insecurities. And she begins to doubt her attractiveness. Verse 5, "I am dark but lovely, O daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar, like the curtains of Solomon. Do not look upon me because I am dark, because the sun has tanned me. My mother's sons were angry with me. They made me the keeper of the vineyards, but my own vineyard I have not kept." She mourns the fact that her skin is tough and tanned. And she's comparing herself now with the palace princesses. I mean, they're always indoors. I mean, these girls have unlimited Mary Kay budgets. They're always pampered with bubble baths and moisturizers. They've got these creamy complexions. Oh, but the Shulamite, she's been out in the fields, exposed to the wind, under the hot summer sun. She's been caring more about her brother's sheep than about her own appearance. And when she compares herself with the maidens in the royal court, she feels inferior, and she wonders why in the world Solomon would love her. This also helps explain the spiritual experience of many Christians. They too live under the cloud of doubt and insecurity. They're haunted by their flaws and their blemishes and their failures. How could Jesus love the likes of me? And so often we feel so unworthy of His affections. And like the Shulamite, our inferiority is even heightened by the purity and holiness of the people around us that we witness. Well, verse 7 indicates just how deep the Shulamite's insecurities run. She says, "Tell me, O you whom I love, where you feed your flock, where you make it rest at noon, for why should I be as one who veils herself by the flocks of your companions?" She feels so inadequate that she wants to hide behind a veil. And every husband in this room tonight needs to listen up to me now. For just like the Shulamite, your wife has some misgivings about her physical appearance. A recent Harris poll revealed that 99% of all women, that's a lot of women. That's a pretty good proportion. That 99% of all women wish they could change something about their bodies. Hey, all you have to do is look at the popularity of breast implants and fanny tucks and facelifts. It all testifies to the reality of female insecurities. Men, your wife won't give herself freely and uninhibitedly to you unless she is certain that you are satisfied with what you're getting. That means, and I want to say this gently as I can, that means you are an idiot if you ever criticize or talk down about her appearance. You're an idiot if you ever make that mistake. If you want her to want you, you need to praise how she looks. You need to tell her how much you love all of the special features with which God has created her in her. And even the features she's added over the years, you need to tell her how much you like those too. The more assurance you bring, the more affirmation you send, the more trust she has in your appreciation and your acceptance, the more she'll be able to open up and loosen up in her sexual expression. Well, this is exactly what Solomon does here. He speaks to her concerns in verse 8. "If you do not know, O fairest among women, follow in the footsteps of the flock and feed your little goats beside the shepherd's tents." Notice this, she's not fairer than most or one of the fairest. No, he refers to her as fairest of all. Solomon praises her beauty and assures the Shulamite that as far as he's concerned, she has no competition. She has no rival in his heart. You know, for years, radical feminist Gloria Steinem used to say the reason she never married was because she could never mate in captivity. Well, if Gloria wants to compare herself with a wild animal, I suppose that's up to her. But most of the women that I speak to, they talk of marriage not as a captivity, but as an opportunity for creativity. It's only when you're sure of your husband's approval and devotion and that he's going to be there again and again and again, only then can you release mentally and relax emotionally and explode sexually. This means that if a husband wants a fun, vibrant sex life, he needs to show sensitivity to his wife's insecurity. If you're a husband, you want to write that down, you need to show a sensitivity to your wife's insecurity. Your acceptance can put her at ease. Now, Solomon continues in verse 9. "I have compared you, my love, to my filly among Pharaoh's chariots." Pharaoh's filly. This might have been an Egyptian princess. Kings in those days would seal treaties by giving a daughter in marriage to their ally. This woman may have joined Solomon's harem as a diplomatic maneuver. Whatever the circumstances, though, the presence of this woman had added to the Shulamite's insecurities. I mean, what's a country girl compared to an Egyptian princess? Or so she thought. Solomon lets the Shulamite know that she is the only one for him. He adds in verse 10, "Your cheeks are lovely with ornaments, your neck with chains of gold." And then the daughters chime in, "We will make your ornaments of gold with studs of silver." In other words, her jewelry is on order. She too will soon enjoy the advantages of palace life. You know, her ornaments are coming. You know, it's interesting, our King Jesus also clothes us with spiritual gifts. You know, you see yourself as you used to be, but he sees you clothed with his righteousness, blessed with his gifts. He sees you as adorned and decked out in the grace that he's lavished upon you. God's grace not only chooses us and saves us, but it blesses us and adorns us. Now, verse 12 through chapter 2, verse 7, the Shulamite recounts a night of intimacy that she had with the king early in their marriage. And this is the first of several romantic and erotic sections in the book. This evening began at a state dinner, but it ended with a sexual feast. That evening, the Shulamite, she wore a new perfume. Could have been Hallel number 5. I'm not sure. But in the midst of the meal, the aroma of this new perfume, it sort of wafted across the room. And it caught the king's attention. And she says in verse 12, while the king is at his table, my spikenard sends forth its fragrance. He catches the smell of the perfume, and they look at each other, and they exchange these knowing glances, and just the look in each other's eyes arouse passion. Notice here, it's sometimes the little gestures, the caring glances, that lead to a night of passion in a marriage. Shlomo and Shula, they begin their foreplay long before they enter the bedroom. I had a book I saw published several years ago. It's entitled, Sex Begins in the Kitchen. I never read the book, but I never forgot the title. The implication is that little acts of kindness and thoughtfulness and tenderness by a husband throughout the day do more to arouse his wife sexually than does a sudden embrace at the end of the day. Guys need to understand this. You know, men need to understand the difference in the sexual impulses of men and women. Sometimes we forget. You see, men are turned on by sight. I mean, just show a husband a little leg and the guy goes nuts. But women, they're aroused slowly, more gradually. A stimulating night in bed begins with a kind word at breakfast and a phone call to your sweetheart at noon and help with the dishes after dinner and putting the kids to bed. I mean, guys, women respond more to forethought than to simply foreplay. You know, in terms of sexual desire, men are like dry leaves. We're just dry. We're a pile of dry leaves, man. We are easily combustible. It doesn't take much for us to ignite, but once we do, we burn out rather quickly. Whereas women are like charcoal, man. Women are like charcoal. It takes longer, and it takes more to ignite them. Lighting charcoal can be a delicate job. I mean, you got to protect it from the wind, and you got to prime it with a little lighter fluid, and you got to be patient, and it may take several matches, you know, to catch it on fire, to get a flame going. But I'm telling you, once it begins to burn, it lasts a lot longer than a pile of leaves, I can tell you that. Men, your wife has a deeper threshold for sexual enjoyment than you do. But in order for her to reach it, she has to be gently primed and protected and shown patience. Song of Solomon teaches married couples that there is a big difference between having sex and making love. Solomon and the Shulamite's night of lovemaking, it begins with the smell of perfume at dinner. But soon they retire to their bridal chambers. She says in verse 13, "A bundle of myrrh is my beloved to me, that lies all night between my breasts." Oriental women, they often slept with a bag of perfume around their neck so that the next day they carried it around with them, a pleasant odor. This was her way of saying that her husband brings out the best in her. She says, "My beloved is to me a cluster of henna blooms in the vineyards of En-Gedi." Verse 15, Solomon speaks, "Behold, you are fair, my love. Behold, you are fair. You have dove's eyes." A dove was a bird associated with purity and innocence. The Shulamite speaks next, "Behold, you are handsome, my beloved. Yes, pleasant." Notice both lovers are complimenting each other's appearance. And then in verse 17, she mentions, also, our bed is green. The beams of our houses are cedar, and our rafters are fir. Notice now she's looking at the rafters, which means she's on her back. She's lying on her back now. She's inviting her husband to bed. Chapter 2, I am the rose of Sharon and the lily of the valleys. Now some Bible teachers ascribe these words to Solomon and then by inference to Jesus. And there are actually some old hymns that refer to Jesus as the rose of Sharon and as the lily of the valley. But this doesn't speak of Solomon. This speaks of the Shulamite. She's the one uttering these words. Again, here's what's happening. She's struggling with her insecurities. They're in bed together. They're intimate with one another. But she's feeling that she's not enough, that she's not sufficient. Her insecurities are haunting her. You see, in ancient Israel, roses and lilies, they were common, man. They were everywhere. Rather than go for $100 a dozen, you could go out and pick them anywhere. Roses, lilies, they were just common things. And what's happening here is that the Shulamite is bringing her insecurities to bed. She's saying, oh, I'm just a lily. I'm just a rose of Sharon. I'm just a lily in the valley. And her self-doubts are about to spoil the evening if it were not for Solomon's sensitivity. Remember, guys, you got to be sensitive to your wife's insecurities. I love how he answers her in verse 2. He says, oh, like a lily among thorns, so is my love among the daughters. What a fantastic line. I know you feel like a lily, sweetheart, but in my book, you're a lily among thorns. Solomon was sensitive to his wife's insecurities and reservations, and he was quick to lay them to rest. It saved the evening. The Shulamite speaks of Solomon in verse 3. Like an apple tree among the trees of the woods, so is my beloved among the sons. I sat down in his shade with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. Now the phrase, I sat down in his shade, his fruit was sweet to the taste, these are sexual metaphors. Apparently she's under his limbs. She's tasting his fruit. Use your imagination here. And notice verse 4. He brought me to the banqueting house, and his banner over me was love. Notice her enjoyment of sex, ladies. She is so satisfied with her husband's love that she calls their bedroom the banqueting house. Guys, when your wife says, hey, sweetheart, let's have a banquet. Let's go back to the old banquet hall. Hey, that's something to get excited about. Shulamite says in verse 5, sustain me with cakes of raisins. Refresh me with apples, for I am lovesick. Literally, the word lovesick means exhausted from making love. She's exhausted, but she's encouraging him on. Verse 6, his left hand is under my head, and his right hand embraces me. Solomon is acting unselfishly. He's satisfying his wife. I mean, the pile of leaves burned out a long time ago, but the charcoal is still glowing. And I hope you realize that these are not just Washington apples here she's talking about. These are Solomon's apples. I'll bet you didn't know that was in the Bible, but it is. As I said earlier, just remember, God isn't blushing. Now, let me make 2 points here. First, why all this symbolism? Why all this talk of apples and raisin cakes and under his shade and on? Well, understand this. When God speaks of sexual expression, he doesn't use slang terms. That'd be crass and crude. Nor does he use medical terms. That would be unromantic and mechanical. No, God describes sexual activity with poetic symbolism. I sat down in his shade. His fruit was sweet to my taste. Use a little imagination, and these phrases become quite the turn on. I mean, ladies, think about it for a minute. What's more appealing? Hey, get over here. Let me inspect the merchandise. Or, let me visit your garden and enjoy its fruit. I mean, what would you rather hear? Hey, let me make a suggestion. If you're married, why not you and your spouse try to use some poetic language in your lovemaking? It will engage your mind and activate your imagination. And understand, the most vital sexual organ for husbands and wives is your brain. If your sex life has become bland, why not spice it up with some verbal stimulation? Don't talk dirty, talk descriptive. Develop some clean yet poetic language, some suggestive language that'll help you convey your desires. I dare you. Well, here's the second point. Notice throughout these verses here, the Shulamite is complimenting her husband's lovemaking skills. And ladies, this is smart. If you want your man to act manly, then you need to treat him as a man. And nothing reinforces a man's masculinity more than knowing he satisfies his wife sexually. So tell him. Encourage him. It'll help him be the man that you want him to be. Now, after this romantic encounter with her husband, the Shulamite warns her single friends in verse 7. She says, "I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the does of the field, do not stir up nor awaken love until it pleases." She's saying, wait until marriage to stir up these sexual passions. Now, here's what the Shulamite would say if she were here tonight. She would say, sex is hot and it's holy. It's sizzling and it's spiritual. It's giddy and it's godly. But sex comes with a warning label. Sex is good, but it becomes harmful when it's engaged in outside of a lifelong marital commitment. Everything we're reading here works in the context of marriage. It becomes destructive outside of that context. In fact, three times in the song, chapter 2, verse 7, chapter 3, verse 5, chapter 8, verse 4, the Shulamite tells her unmarried maidens not to incite sexual passion until after marriage. You see, sex is like a nuclear explosion. Once you've lost control, it's awfully hard to stop the reaction. Beware of the power of sex. God didn't design our bodies to reach peak sexual arousal and then suddenly slam on the brakes. And this is why heavy petting and sexual contact before marriage is harmful. You thought it was bad because it could lead to intercourse, and that is an immediate danger. But the real damage it does is it teaches a person how not to have intercourse, how to get to the brink and then not drink. God didn't design it that way. It's like learning to drive with your foot on the brake. It's going to create some dysfunctions in how you drive. And it's going to create some dysfunctions in your sex life after you get married. Your body wasn't designed to rev up the hormones, to rev up things, and then suddenly kill the engine. And when that's done over and over, it teaches the body unnatural responses, dysfunctions that do interfere with intimacy after you're married. When God says no to premarital sexual intimacy, he isn't being a killjoy. In fact, just the opposite. He's trying to preserve for your marriage the highest and the holiest joys. Well, here in verse 8, the Shulamite, she flashes back to their courtship and to the day that Solomon proposed. She says, "The voice of my beloved, behold, he comes leaping upon the mountains, skipping upon the hills." She admired the way he walked. She said, "Man, he's got good legs. Look at his calves."
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies, constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, there's also some great kingdom-minded options. we'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store, or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.